Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Is Ireland sitting on a wind energy gold mine? Well, it's something that the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar seemed to suggest on this programme last week when he talked about his vision for Ireland becoming energy independent. But does greater investment in the economy jeopardise climate initiatives? A new report compiled by the Government Economic and Evaluation Service says that almost €2 billion of public spending this year is being used for measures identified as potentially climate harmful. The details of the spending outlined by Caroline O'Doherty in today's Irish Independent include farming grants, regional airport supports and the over 70s fuel allowance. Well, to talk more about this, I'm joined on the line by environmental journalist John Gibbons. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Claire.
So what does the report firstly tell us? Because it does highlight these things that are deemed potentially harmful to the climate. This is after a review of budget spending for 2023.
That's right. I suppose the first thing to say is that just because something is defined as climate harmful, it doesn't mean that it isn't money that we shouldn't be spending. So, for example, the spending on the fuel allowance is obviously an anti-poverty measure. And as you say, that was extended last year to the over 70s. So nobody would argue that we shouldn't be protecting people from, you know, poorer people from fuel poverty. So clearly it is a positive social measure, but it has a negative climate impact. So I think it's probably important to distinguish that some of these measures, they're not intrinsically wrong, but they have a climate downside. And the fuel allowance is a case in point. So, for example, we're spending hundreds of millions a year on a fuel allowance, which encourages people in fuel poverty to buy basically fossil fuels. If we take that money instead and invest it in retrofitting and so on, you can achieve exactly the same outcome, but with a much better climate profile.
You've got to do both, though, John, don't you? Because you can't take that money away to spend it on other things.
That's right. And this really, I mean, the government is already going in this direction, Claire, because we already have a situation where people in fuel poverty are entitled, for example, to a full retrofit on their homes, completely paid for by the state. So this is probably a positive example where, rather than simply throwing money into fuel allowances, which essentially is obviously adding to the climate problem, but it's also money that you're not getting back. If you invest similar investment, which runs into billions over a decade, instead, you're going to get, you're actually solving the root cause of fuel poverty, which is basically badly designed, poorly insulated homes. And that way, you're achieving the same effect, but you're doing it in a climate-friendly way. And of course, Claire, in a way that is employment positive here in Ireland, because, retrofitting and so on, this is really good for jobs. So it has a double benefit.
Now, the fuel allowance is only one item highlighted in that report. We also have supports for regional airports and farming grants too, John.
Yeah, there's a number of these measures. And if we start with regional airports, obviously, this is a very climate negative measure to be supporting regional airports. We're a very small island. So if you take, for example, supporting an airport, like whether it's Farran Fóra or the airport in Knock, in many cases, you're causing unfair competition between existing public transport, whether it's buses or trains, on what is really a very small island. So I think this report is really highlighting some of the spending that just doesn't make sense. And as I say, regional airport supports on an island of this size in a climate emergency doesn't make sense.
Okay, let's talk about opportunity then when it comes to renewable energy sources. And Leo Varadkar seemed to be very optimistic about Ireland's future on this score, particularly when it comes to wind energy on and offshore, suggesting that we could become a net exporter of energy. How much potential do you think that has for us?
I think it's almost unlimited. We started, for example, last week with the auction of 3 gigawatts of new wind energy. And to translate 3 gigawatts, Claire, into I suppose something that we can understand, that's the equivalent of more than 3 Money Point power stations worth of energy. So that's enough energy to power about 2 million Irish homes. And that was just on the first round. And this is offshore wind, by the way. And offshore we obviously have already developed a reasonable amount of onshore wind, but the big opportunity commercially, economically, and from a climate point of view for Ireland is, of course, offshore, because our territorial waters are seven times the area of the actual land area of Ireland. So there's an enormous commercial opportunity to go offshore. And I know that Taoiseach, he was recently involved in a consortium of eight European countries that are basically putting their heads together and putting their technology together to build, if you like, an extended wind grid, which would run from the North Sea through the Irish Sea and into the North Atlantic. Now, we know that renewable resources obviously suffer from variability problems where it's not always windy. But what we also know is that when you distribute a wind grid over a sufficiently large geographical area, especially at sea, the grid evens out and you end up with a much more reliable wind service. At the moment, our onshore wind, for example, it's very susceptible to calm days like today, for example. There's very little wind on the grid. Once you move offshore, once you go to much bigger turbines, and once you distribute that grid over a large geographic area, it becomes much more reliable. And I think the economic opportunity for Ireland here is absolutely enormous. At the moment, we're probably, typically Ireland takes about 5 to 6 gigawatts of energy for our general power. We can probably quintuple that, Clara, to about 25 gigawatts.
And sell the overage.
Yes, that's right. This would be through interconnectors, obviously, to Britain, to France. We're already in the process of putting in an interconnector to France. And that also, of course, has the advantage of connecting us to continental Europe. At the moment, we're in the situation where we have our grid is isolated from Europe. The more we can interconnect it with Europe, it means, for example, that on a very calm day, we might be buying nuclear energy back from France to subsidize our power. And we, in turn, would be selling wind energy back to Europe. And it is important to say that we couldn't produce enough clean energy for the European markets. There's effectively an infinite demand on the in continental Europe for clean energy. So there's no question of building something and saying, gosh, we've no one to sell this to. And it is also, of course, a future-proofed investment.
Yeah, a couple of things though about that. You mentioned these massive wind turbines that would be situated out into the sea off the coast of Ireland. What about the environmental impact of those?
Yeah, I think it's a sort of a double-edged sword. Of course, there's going to be an impact. I mean, for example, in the Irish Sea, the turbines are placed directly into the seafloor. In the North Atlantic, it's more likely that we'll be looking at floating wind turbines, which use similar technology to floating oil rigs. So ironically, Claire, some of the skill set that has actually led the offshore oil industry will also be used in wind, which is maybe an unexpected dividend. But okay, so there's obviously going to be some disruption when you're actually pile driving turbines into the seafloor. But once a wind farm is in place, its actual environmental impact should be minimal. In fact, I would even argue that a wind farm will probably end up being the equivalent of a marine protected area, because it is most unlikely that trawlers will be able to trawl through it. That means this will be an area where fish will be able to spawn, and even the bases of wind turbines can form spawning grounds for fish and for other creatures. So ironically, you wouldn't, you know, there are certain developments. For example, if you're drilling for oil off the coast of Ireland, or gas indeed, you know, you have the possibility there of an environmental disaster from a leak and so on. Wind, obviously, a wind spill is not a problem. And I think from the point of view of marine life, I would suggest that our fish stocks will benefit from having areas of the Irish Sea and the North Atlantic that fishing vessels are unable to access.
You'll know that people who live along our coastline, some of them anyway, are very unhappy at the prospect of having to look at these wind turbines out across the sea from their homes or from the coastline. There's an irony, isn't there, of taking away our natural beauty, impeding those beautiful views with these wind turbines in order to save the planet, to stop us or to wean us off fossil fuels.
Yeah, I understand that irony. And I think it's important to say that the wind turbines in most cases will be located probably at or beyond the visible horizon. Now, if you really want to get up on your tippy toes on the top of Killiney Hill, you might just about be able to see the blades. But we should be talking about them placing on the visible horizon. But you are right, Claire. There's no question there are impacts in this. And this is an issue. I mean, for example, at the moment, there are colossal impacts in, for example, the countries where the fuels that we use in Ireland, whether it's coal or oil or gas, where this stuff is mined, there's huge impacts on the local populations, on the environment, on the ecosystems. But of course, we in Ireland, we don't see those because the product arrives to us and we simply use it. So a lot of this stuff is really out of sight and out of mind. And what we need to do, I think, is to take a more grown-up attitude and say, we need to be responsible for our own energy security. At the moment, Ireland is shipping about 6.5 billion euros a year to overseas, to countries probably, and to be honest, that we mightn't like to necessarily deal with, some very unpleasant petrostates and oil dictatorships. We might be better off keeping that money at home, investing here. And you know what? If that means that the view is a little bit different, I think we'll get used to it. For example, in Denmark... Yeah,
I just want to ask you another question, which I know people will have concerns about. If we do this, if we go down the road of the big offshore wind farms and we're exporting all of this energy to our friends in Europe and in the UK, who's going to get the wealth? Are we going to be a wealthy state, a wealthy country, or will it be private companies ultimately who benefit?
That's a really interesting point. I think there's obviously been concern in the past, for example, with the Corrib oil fields or the gas fields, I should say, very little revenue ever flowed back to the Irish state for that. I think we've learned a few lessons from that. And in the case of wind, for example, the auction that I just described, the pitch price there is 86 euros per megawatt. Now, in simple terms, what that means, Claire, is that if energy prices go above that, the Irish state takes all the surplus. So in other words, if there's a, and you'll pardon the pun, a windfall of wind energy revenues, they come directly back to the Irish state. That's the first issue. The second one is that the consortium that I mentioned earlier, that the Taoiseach was involved with, the idea here is that Ireland, in the early stages of offshore wind development, yes, we will be obviously partnering with international companies. They will, we'll be providing, say, a lot of the onshore infrastructure. They'll be providing the offshore infrastructure. So there'll be a sort of a cost sharing in that. But over time, as we grow experience, as we've seen in countries like Denmark, where they've built an entire wind industry, that we should begin to increase our expertise. And as we develop more and more offshore wind farms, that the Irish state, and there's no reason, particularly when we've got so much extra cash knocking around that people are looking, what are we going to do with it? I mean, what an excellent use of a sovereign wealth fund would be to invest it in a long-term clean renewable energy. Let's say the Irish government decides to invest 10 or 20 billion euros in actually buying into these developments. That means every time electricity is drawn on shore or it's sold to the continent, Clare, that we, the Irish taxpayer, are beneficiaries from that. And we should take that view. We've seen, for example, Norway has a massive sovereign wealth fund. Now, admittedly, it's from burning oil, but they were clever enough in how they organised that to make sure that the ordinary Norwegian citizen benefited rather than simply the incoming companies, as has happened in so many other countries where oil revenues have flooded into the elites and left the ordinary people actually in worse condition.
All right. Well, let's hope we all benefit at some point. John, thank you very much. John Gibbons, environmental journalist there. Coming up next, find out why having a strong core is so important for our health at any age.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.